So then you start muting your upsetness. You start gaslighting yourself. Like a lot of you guys have this issue of like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. You don't tell anyone when you're upset. You don't even acknowledge it to yourself. You learned that from somewhere. Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Zeller. I'm so excited to share this episode with you today. This episode is coming to you from a live group coaching call that I had with my students in my most popular program, Your Life's Work. In Your Life's Work, we take a really holistic approach to looking at your life as a whole. And if you are not feeling really lit up inside, really joyful every single day of your life, then that's what we take a look at in Your Life's Work, with a focus in on your career. However, there's so much more to this program, and there's so much more to your life and to actually finding that deep, joyful fulfillment that you are looking for. Part of this is boundaries and moving through our codependent patterns. Now, in this episode, I do a really big deep dive into codependency. I would say this is like kind of a high-level masterclass on codependency. So if you have recognized codependency in yourself, or if you are wondering if maybe you have codependent patterns, this is an amazing episode for you to listen into. I would bookmark this, save this somewhere, and come back to it again and again because it is so rich. It has so much depth. I guarantee the second, third, fourth time you listen, you will catch something new. If you have a friend or a family member or somebody in your life that you know struggles with people pleasing, codependency, boundaries, that sort of thing, be sure to pass this episode along to them. I also have many episodes that I've done on boundaries and people pleasing and codependency. I'm going to link several of those in the show notes, so be sure to listen to those after this one. If you like the episode, don't forget to subscribe and follow so you don't miss future episodes as they are released. And I really, really appreciate all of your 5-star reviews. It only takes a few seconds to leave me one, but it really helps me to reach more people just like you. Thank you so much for doing that. If you aren't familiar with the work that I do in the world, you can find all of that and more in the show notes below. If you enjoy the podcast, you would definitely love my courses. Be sure to check them out at thetransformationschool.com. Now, without further ado, let's get into this very juicy episode. Okay, so codependency often develops because you were seen in childhood by caretakers that responded to you when you performed in a certain way. And you felt more seen when you were a certain way than when you were other ways. And in a lot of ways, it almost felt like you could have potentially even been devalued or sometimes even like punished if you are other ways or your most authentic self. Because if a caretaker is projecting onto you who they think you should be, and you are exhibiting behaviors that are different from that, then your authentic self is essentially shut down. And then you notice in childhood, like, oh, I'm seen or I'm valued when I'm X, Y, or Z. And so then you adhere to that model. But the other thing is that within that model of taking care of a child or giving love, it feels very conditional to you as a child. And so it's like, it feels very kind of black and white. Like, I don't have value unless this person recognizes my value, which means I don't even exist. Like, I don't even deserve to exist, or I don't even feel like I exist unless I'm getting this kind of feedback. And I'm valued in this kind of way. Also, though, and this is big with codependency, something that likely happened if you have codependent tendencies is you were tasked in some way to emotionally regulate a parent. So what this basically means is that when your parent was upset, you both felt it, and you unconsciously, in most cases, did something to calm the parent or regulate the parent's nervous system. And sometimes this is really overt, like really obvious, like a parent is really manipulative and will manipulate you into doing that. And then sometimes it's more subtle and you don't even know that that's what you did. You don't even know that you were emotionally regulating a parent. When a parent does that, when they rely on you to emotionally regulate them, there is a lack of acknowledging that you are a separate being. And it's just like very subtle, but they're instead looking at you as a narcissistic extension of them. Like you are a reflection of them. You are almost part of them. When a parent looks at you like that, like, well, you're a reflection of me or you're a part of me. That means a couple of things. One, if you think about it in terms of like, okay, if a caretaker or my parent thought that I was a extension of them, then when I did something that was different from what they would do, it really upset them because they wouldn't do that. And so because you are a part of them, they can't imagine why you would do that because they don't see you as a separate autonomous being. And this is not intentionally that they did this. It's like most likely the way that they developed with their caretaker as well. So this is passed down through generations, right? You know, parents have like, a lot of parents have this idea of like, I'm going to mold my child. Like I'm going to mold my child into this, you know? And when you have that very grippy idea of parenting, you end up projecting onto the child who the child should be. And depending on your own boundaries or the boundaries of your parent, there's a lack of seeing the child just for who they are and their own natural gifts and how they blossom and what brings them joy. Instead, there's a constant projecting in terms of who they should be. When you have a caretaker that is constantly telling you who you are, telling you who you should be, giving you feedback for only particular things, in a way, it's like they're gaslighting you and you start to believe them that you don't have your own self. You aren't your own being. You are just a reflection of who they believe you to be. And it causes you to have a real fracture with who you really are inside. It's like, it's difficult to tune into that, to figure out who am I really? What do I really want? And instead you get into a pattern of looking to others to tell you who you are, to tell you what you're good at, to give you a sense of self-worth, to give you a sense of I exist, because that's the pattern you were given. If your parent didn't see you as a fully separate, autonomous being that had your own thoughts, beliefs, likes, dislikes, emotions, and they didn't see you as separate in terms of, you know, when I have emotions, it's not up to you to regulate them. You don't need to worry about that. I can do that on my own. That's a secure attachment. That's a parent with a secure attachment. Right? Or another like big sign of a codependent parent is if you were upset as a child and your parent actually got more upset than you when you were upset because it upset them that you were upset. That is a lack of a boundary because they, again, are seeing you as an extension of them. I know this can be confusing if you have your own kids because you're like, well, I mean, how do I not be upset when my child is upset? But think about it when you were a child and you got upset. If your parent almost had like hysterical response to that or got more upset, how did that as a child make you feel? You would often then feel immediately like you needed to regulate them because it made you feel so bad as a child that they were now more upset. So then what you start doing is you start adjusting your responses to your caretakers because you don't want to trigger their upsetness. So then you start muting your upsetness. You start gaslighting yourself. Like a lot of you guys have this issue of like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. You don't tell anyone when you're upset. You don't even acknowledge it to yourself. You learned that from somewhere. It was safer in childhood to pretend like you were fine because when you weren't, it triggered your parents or your caretakers or whoever was around you so much that it made you actually feel worse. So you learned it was better to just keep it to yourself. Or convince yourself that you're fine. So these are all tendrils, threads of enmeshment and codependency that parents can have with kids. And I would say like, by and large, this is probably the norm. Like information about attachment and how to parent in a more conscious way has only been available in the last 10 or 15 years. So the majority of our parents probably had an unhealthy attachment. Like that's just, no one talked about it, you know, like 20, 30 years ago. At all. And conscious parenting, even today, has not hit a real tipping point. So People are only just learning. But as a child, if your parent is looking at you as an extension of themselves and they're super emotionally invested and they get really upset when you get upset and they want you to be a certain way and they're always trying to tell you how to be and they're only giving you positive feedback when it's something that they think is positive, then what happens is you have a distorted sense of self. It's almost like you don't have a full sense of self and you're fractured from it. And you've had to be, because when you tried to establish a sense of self in childhood, that got rejected. A lot of really codependent parents feel actually threatened if you have too much autonomy. They feel like that's you revolting against them or trying to break from relationship with them. And so they will coerce you to being more attached to them. Does that kind of make sense? You guys may want to watch this again. Just FYI, it's like a lot of information. So you learn, okay, like you basically you're being gaslit your whole childhood and you learn like, okay, my sense of self is actually accessed through other people telling me who I am, through other people giving me positive feedback. That's how I know that I exist. That's how I know that I feel seen. So what ends up happening in adulthood is you look to others to establish a sense of self and a sense of self-worth. Because it doesn't naturally, well, it does naturally exist in you, but you're fractured from it. You don't see that you are already whole. You don't feel that because you were cut off from it from like a really young age. Because you're kind of cut off from that inner sense of wholeness, it can feel like a vacuum. Like it can feel like you can never get enough. And you're always searching for it. Like you're always trying to, it's like something's missing and you're always trying to fill that in some way. Just find that one thing. And then this is where people get the ambition monster thing starts happening because people think once I get to this point, I'll have enough success or I'll have enough love or I'll have enough blah. And then I'll feel whole because we always externalize it, or I'll get enough acclaim or enough people will notice me and then I'll finally feel this way. And then that's why it becomes, it's like the hamster wheel. It's endless because you get to that thing and then you don't feel whole, right? The other thing is that a lot of times codependency will actually make you somebody who you are not, because you get approval for certain things from certain people and that feels what you feel like to be good. It's like kind of the drug. And so you keep doing that to get that approval. And it ends up making you someone that you're not. Like it's really not your authentic self doing that thing. But you've learned that you get that positive feedback and your framework from childhood is once I get that positive feedback, that means I exist and that means I have worth. So I need that, obviously, because if I didn't have that, oh my God, like who would I be? How would I feel if I didn't have that thing? So this is why I say, if you think about it like this, right? Like if you think about, okay, codependency is approximating wholeness. It's like the shadow of wholeness. It's not actually wholeness, but it's the closest thing I know to wholeness because that's what I was taught. Like I actually wasn't taught how to feel whole and how to be my most authentic self and how to be loved and shine bright as my most authentic self. I was taught that I got attention and love and feedback when I was something else. So it's like, it's next to it, but it never satisfies because it's not the real thing. This is why it's an addiction. Because when an addict is searching for something, they're trying to create, they're approximating the feeling that can exist naturally, but they can't find. You know, a lot of alcoholics drink because they feel more regulated. Their nervous system feels more chill when they're drinking. And so they're looking for that, but it's just approximating it because it never lasts and it leaves them feeling more empty inside. Gabor Mate, who's the trauma specialist. He's like amazing. If you guys haven't heard of Gabor Mate, he always asks this question, ask not why the addiction, ask why the pain. So with any addiction, we're trying to avoid a painful feeling. In the case of codependency, we're trying to avoid, in a way, the existential terror of, do I even exist? Do I even matter? That would occur if we didn't have it. If we didn't have that feedback. The thing about codependency too is like you had a parent who was looking at you as an extension of themselves. This is often now how you will look at people. You don't know you're doing this, of course, but you will look at them as an extension of yourself. And this is why when people don't agree with you, it can feel really painful and confusing. It can feel like they're against you if they don't agree with you. And it's because you're not seeing them as a fully separate being, because you were never shown how to see people as a separate being, because you were never seen as a separate being. So you walk around and it's like, it's almost like you're feeling into who's the best extension of me, who's going to agree with me the most, who's going to give me that thing that I need, versus walking around and seeing people just for who they are. So it's kind of an energy, like if you think of an addict, if any of you have ever known addicts or can feel into an addict energy, like there's a taking energy with an addict, because they're always like looking for that thing that they need, that they need, that they need. And codependency is the same thing. Of course, like it presents totally different. It's really hidden. It's really insidious. Like it may just be like, I've succeeded. Now I want people to see me succeed, or I really want this person right now to agree with me, or whatever it may be. But it's like you're unconsciously grabbing for that all the time because it's so painful not to have it. It feels so painful, and it's like scary almost not to have it. You're just like, who am I if I don't have this thing? And this is why I know Tilo mentioned this to a few of you, but I feel like maybe I heard the boundary expert Terry Cole mention this first, but this is why people pleasing is manipulation. Because when you're with someone, you're manipulating them to give you what you need. And sometimes that's just like safety or I like you. But if you felt whole, it wouldn't matter. You wouldn't need to please them, and what they were doing wouldn't matter so much to you because you don't need anything. Does that make sense? So there's something in you that feels like you need something. Some signs that codependency can be an addiction is it can interfere with or stop you from doing the things that you want to do. It can feel like you don't have any control over it. Like it almost feels like a compulsion sometimes. Like the people pleasing at times can feel like a compulsion, or the need for the validation can sometimes feel like a compulsion. Like it can feel like an urgency, like I need this. You can feel painful emotions that come up if you don't get it. Just like an addict, like say they're addicted to heroin. If they can't find the heroin, it's going to like create a lot of difficult feelings for them, right? Like they're going to feel really fucking bad in their body. Same thing with codependency. Like if you guys were, for those of you that feel really codependent, if you were to like go off into a cave for a few weeks, it may really come up because like you haven't gotten it. Like it may be, it could be terrifying. Like you could feel fucking terrified. Like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. I feel so much anxiety. And that was the last one, is you can feel anxiety or in some cases, even terror if you don't get it, kind of an existential terror. Like, I don't know why I feel so terrible, but something is coming up right now. When it comes to moving through codependency, what do you do to overcome people pleasing codependency? The first is learn about how to place boundaries and start to do it. And this is where the books come in, because boundaries, especially if you grew up with a codependent enmeshed parent that didn't let you set any boundaries at all, because to them, that was a rejection. Just thinking about like, where did my parent really want me to do X when I really didn't want to do that? And I still had to do it. Like that can be a lack of a boundary between your parent. Your parent is projecting onto you who they think you should be and not giving you a sense of autonomy, a sense of choice, and not letting you set a boundary there. Again, this is like super common. A lot of parents don't let their kids set boundaries. So learn about how to place boundaries and start to do it, because you oftentimes didn't learn in childhood. The second is learn to recognize when you're being codependent. Because at first, again, like we were talking about, she was totally blind to it. She was like, I'm not codependent. I don't even, what? So it's like learning, when is that coming up in me? How does it feel in my body when that is coming up in me? And then attempt to stop yourself from doing it. Because just like an addict, it is not going to ultimately fulfill you. Like you just feel like you need more and more and more, like all the time. Like it's not going to actually give you the fullness that you're looking for, the wholeness that you are looking for. Which brings me to three. In the moment that you're stopping yourself, or if you feel an urge to like people please or be codependent, reprogram right then. Because it's up, like the trigger is activated, the nerve is activated. And that is the best time to reprogram it, when it is activated. And then the fourth thing is start to stand alone and learn who you are without the psychic attachments to people around you. Because the crazy thing about codependency, and this is something that I've been learning in the last year or two, because codependency is something I've really, really worked on for the last 7 years. I mean, oh my God, it's been like something I've really had to work out. And I realized in this last year or two that there were like little threads still there, but they were so, so small. I couldn't even sense them at first. But there was like a small part of me that, and this is actually much bigger at first, but it's like codependency, the energetic of it stops you and clouds you from your authentic self. You immediately shrink if you're codependent with someone. Think about it. Like if you have two people that are full authentic beings, and then what happens with codependency is they merge, but in order to merge, they both have to shrink. It's like they're trying to take up the same space. So it's like you have two spaces. Both people could be autonomous, but if you're trying to be codependent with someone, you merge and then you both have to shrink. It's like a natural thing then, if you're being codependent with someone, to not shine. Like you will not shine the brightest if you are in a codependent relationship with someone. And this all the way goes down to like a little interaction, like say like, okay, I don't have a real relationship with this person, but right now I'm people pleasing them. You are automatically smaller than you would be if you were not people pleasing them. It's just part of the energetics of codependency. In every codependent interaction, you are making yourself smaller. So for me, if I wanted to shine brighter in the world, I've had to see where I'm being codependent and break those patterns so that it releases me from the bind of that so that I can shine. You know, I said there's an energetic to codependency. And it's funny because thinking back to my first coaching experience, one of my first coaching experiences where my coach was trying to kind of tell me that I had an issue with boundaries. This is what she was feeling in me. And I had no idea, but the energetic feels very much like clingy vampire. Like I need you and I need you to fill me. And this is why, if you think about it, if you're in that energy of, I need you and I need this blood and I need, you know what I mean? Like, but if you're in that like clingy vampire energy, like you can't see that person for who they really are. Like there's no space for that because you need something so bad from them in that moment. So it's not just about like, oh, you know, the surface level here would be like, oh, I need this person's approval. It's like, no, deep down, you don't feel good enough. That's why you need that person's approval. Deep down, you don't feel whole. That's why you need someone else to make you feel whole. Deep down, it feels like something is missing. That's why you're searching for that. Or in some cases, especially with the people pleasing or doing what other people think, it's like deep down, that is how you were seen, is when you were pleasing other people, pleasing a caretaker. And that's the only way you were seen. So I don't feel seen is what's driving you. And if I don't feel seen, I mean, this may sound weird, but there's kind of an energetic there of I don't even know if I exist. And that can feel really terrifying. This can also be a fear of being alone or feeling lonely can drive codependency. When I was first doing my own personal work, I had a mentor suggest this to me. And what I did was I went into the desert in California and I spent a whole week just to myself, no phone, no computer, just my journal, no books, didn't intake any information, just my journal. I had a fucking meltdown like the first night. I didn't even know what was coming up in me. I was like, why am I so anxious? I was like bawling. I had no idea what it was, but like it was like the clingy vampire coming up and being like, oh my God, there's nothing to feed me. Oh my God. I couldn't even put my finger on it. It felt so existential. And then really within like 2-3 days, I started connecting to the wholeness in me. And that clingy vampire started settling because I found what I was looking for and it was in me. So if any of you have never spent a couple days just yourself, like no one else around you, no phone, no computer. I mean, just thinking about that as, I mean, maybe something you could actually do, but also just as a thought experiment of like, if that idea makes me feel a little anxious, why? Why does that make me feel anxious? You know? Or the, what you mentioned in terms of like, yeah, I'm saying no to more things, but I'm really feeling lonely. I would venture to say, it's not just here that you want human connection. It's that there's that, I need this thing coming up. And so, you know, first of all, be compassionate with yourself. Like you're not going to stop being codependent overnight. Like it just doesn't happen. So it's like, go to your edge. Like go to your edge. Like If you can go, if you feel lonely and you're like, you know what, I'm going to give myself what I need tonight. I'm going to do something that I think is like a treat. Maybe I'm going to buy my favorite dessert, or maybe I'm going to like go do my own private workout, you know, and then I'm going to do a reprogramming. And tonight I'm just going to lean into that edge, even though it feels scary and it's really hard, but I'm going to stay alone and I'm not going to go to a social outing. Every time you do that, every time you go against the edge or you feel a desire to people please, but you pull back and you don't do it. And you reprogram instead. Like every time you're at an edge, it releases the codependency more and more. Every time you set a boundary, it releases the codependency. So it's like, it's doing the work of creating the boundaries, of resisting the codependency while simultaneously reprogramming and connecting to yourself. And you guys are at such a particular advantage because you're in Psychic Power Activation School. And that really gives you such a through line to your deepest self and to your intuition. Yeah. It's like giving yourself an opportunity for that to grow, to blossom, being your more of your authentic self in front of other people is another way to work through that. So in those moments, you can ask, okay, am I being a clingy vampire right now? Is that energy coming up in me? If it is, how can I take care of myself in this moment instead of making someone else do it? How can I take care of myself in this moment instead of making someone else do it? What questions do you guys have?
I feel like I project codependency to the point where like the extension of oneself, like in the context of my intimate relationships, I've been so accusatory and like, why are you so unwilling to do this? Because I've learned a lot about codependency and done a ton of my own reading. And thinking about it, it's like, I really used to project codependency on my partners and also like in my life, because it's like, I view people that I'm closely intimate with as like a reflection or an extension of myself. So it's a big talk, like it's a big point for me. And then I would get a lot of flack. It'd be like I'm not seeing this person as an individual. And then I look at a relationship or a job or a partnership as like a reflection of myself. I do that all the time. And I guess it was more just like a realization, not a question, but I wanted to ask that as a question if you didn't cover it. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. And that merging, like when we were small children, that learning that we were separate and our own autonomous being was kind of in a way supposed to happen naturally when we were very little. Like a parent is supposed to recognize the child as fully separate and autonomous, having their own feelings, thoughts, sensations, likes, dislikes, all of that. And then you have an internal sense of separation. Like I am me, this person is that person. It's really confusing when that doesn't happen because it skews your everything, like going into adulthood. So it takes some time as an adult to establish that sense of separation. Because at first, again, it feels like an affront. It feels like this person doesn't love me. This person isn't intimate with me. This person hates me. This, like, there's so much projection and connection like that. And it just, it's a slow unwinding. It's a slow separation. And sometimes it'll feel like, you know, you'll have an experience all this with someone and you'll be like, whoa, I didn't feel sticky in that interaction. I felt... And a lot of times this happens if you are already full and if you've been really connected to yourself. Like for instance, when I went to the desert and I had a few days just to myself, I got really connected. I was able to come back with other people and I felt so full and connected to myself. It didn't last, right? Like I fell back into codependent patterns in a few days. But like sometimes it can give you a taste, and sometimes the taste is all you need. The glimpse is all you need. Because once you have the taste, you have something to reference to, like, oh, that's what it's supposed to feel like. Because at first it can be really confusing of like, I don't know what it's supposed to feel like. Like, what is it? I don't know what it's like to see a person totally separate from me and I don't need anything from them ever. Like, I don't know what that feels like. But then every now and then, if you keep doing this work, it will happen. Like, I promise you, you will get a glimpse and then it'll be like a boom and you'll be like, oh shit, that was really fulfilling in a different way. Like that was actually fulfilling. And I left that interaction feeling full and not needing more. So again, it's like having that compassion and just doing the work and taking things slow, going to your edge, and eventually you'll start feeling into it. And then eventually you'll be like me and you'll be able to look back and be like, whoa, I was like a totally clingy vampire. And I thought I was so boundaried. And again, like it was weird because I had a lot of boundaries, but my energy was doing something different, you know?
Just one other thing, like as I'm doing more inner child work, I feel like I really struggle to remember a lot of my childhood. And like, I'm almost like wanting to reach out and like better understand my childhood, but my relationship with my parents is not there yet. I don't know if it ever will be at this stage. So, and I'm honestly not looking for them to like guide me whatsoever. It's just like, I want to better understand things that I honestly can't remember. And maybe it's just doing more inner work, but and memories do come and go, but like I very rarely remember anything like early child. Like maybe it'd be something like I'm 10 years old, 12 years old. And like those are formative years. From what I understand, like the early childhood experiences can shape some of these behaviors.
Yes, this can happen from birth.
Yeah, exactly.
So oftentimes this kind of connection, like for instance, there are mothers that rock their babies to soothe themselves versus rocking the baby to soothe the baby. And you may think, well, what is that really a big distinction? It is energetically. As babies, we ping off of our mother's nervous system. And if our mother has that clingy vampire energy or is trying to self-soothe by rocking us, as literally, there's been a lot of research on this, literally as a baby, like pre-verbal, you will start learning to soothe your parent. So there's some babies that never cry, like never, ever cry. And like, it's been shown in some research that they're actually extremely dysregulated, but they've learned to do that because their parent gets so upset when they cry that it over triggers their nervous system. So they go into freeze.
Wow.
So sometimes it's crazy because you'll see parents that, oh my God, our baby like never, ever cries. I'm not saying this is the case all the time, but a lot of times it's because their baby's in freeze. And again, I'm not saying that's the case all the time, but especially if you know the parents and the parents are super wired and anxious, yeah, the baby's in freeze. Because when the baby cries, you get actually more upset than the baby. And that's so traumatizing to the baby. So it starts pre-verbal. When I first started therapy, I had no memories before the age of 13, not a single one. Like couldn't. I was like, I have no clue. And it's just like, it was unconsciously painful. I thought like, I didn't realize I had a traumatic childhood. I thought like most people, you know, that have nothing really overtly, like I had an overt trauma, like a big T trauma at 14. But before that, I wouldn't have thought I had anything out of the ordinary that happened to me. Until I learned about like little T traumas and complex trauma and complex PTSD and that little tiny things can happen, right? And when little tiny things happen or you aren't given a sense of you're separate from me, you're your own being, we repress that because it's so painful and confusing. It's just confusing, especially if you were gaslit, things like that. So the memories will come. I would just trust that the memories will come as they're meant to. Our bodies are so wise and they will reveal to us memories when we have the support system in place to remember them. And I'm not saying you're going to remember some big trauma or something, just like you'll remember more, right? Like when it feels safe.
Got it. Yeah. One extension, I mean, for me kind of sharing, like I think more about it. I'll talk to my mom about her marriage, her life. And it was almost like having kids kind of saved her to a degree. And she took a lot of connectivity. And I'm really close to my mom for reasons that I'm kind of digging into.
Yes. But just to interject really quick, for a parent to say like, you saved me is a very clear description of what I'm talking about.
Well, 100%. Yeah. 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 Like that's the connection I'm making. And
yeah,
like my mom stopped working when I was born. And I have an older brother and it's like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
it's coming together. Meaning like she connected herself to me as an individual and not herself and all that. So anyways, I'm bringing it up just to make sure that's kind of the right thought process, but
yes.
Yeah. It's a lot to take in. Yeah.
Yes.
It's the more informed I am and aware, like I can always see my parents trying to like be codependent with me and vice versa. So I've actually like cut off a lot of conversations that I've had with my parents as a result of kind of this work I'm doing, and like putting up boundaries with them has been huge in my relationship, but I also need to extend those boundaries to other things in life. Anyways.
How's everyone feeling with this information?
I was going to say that very similar thing. Like it's all making a lot of sense. but I can't help but think about my interactions with my 6-year-old and my 1.5-year-old. And like, not that I feel like I'm doing anything wrong, but it's just like makes me a little bit more self-aware about how I interact and, you know, allowing them to be autonomous, I think.
Stephanie, can I ask you a, it's not particularly on point, right? But one of the things I struggle with my daughter, right, is letting her be her own person, but still like not be rude or not be mean. So when she's upset, it's like, you can be upset, but you just, you can't be unkind. Like, you know, you can't be rude to people, right? Like trying to teach her that kind of social interaction.
Yeah.
Right? but at the same time, every time I say something like that, I'm like, I am trying very much not to belittle her feelings or to invalidate them or, you know, to punish her for having feelings, right? Like I'm very much trying not to do those things, but I'm trying to find that line.
I mean, first of all, I'm not a conscious parenting expert, and it's something I've really been wanting to dig into because I do have so many clients that have these questions. But based on what I do know, I would say the deeper thing here is to understand what prompted her behavior. So like if she's mean to someone, there's some sort of big emotion that's coming up and that prompted her to act in that way. And so more of the questioning in terms of like, instead of the immediate reprimand, more of immediate questioning, like, how are you feeling? And if this is not something that has been established or that you've done a lot of, at first she may be reluctant or not even know how to investigate her own feelings or not know if it's safe to express to you her feelings or any of those things. So it takes some finessing and it takes some time to build that containment, but it's essentially a matter of like getting to the core of what prompted that, the feelings that she's having, helping her learn how to feel her feelings and feel safe feeling her feelings. And there's so much that can be done with kids in terms of regulating kids. So instead of like, you know, maybe we grew up with parents that we had to regulate them. As a parent, you can help regulate them by you getting your nervous system really calm, putting your hand on her heart, like having her breathe with you, telling her it's safe to feel emotions. Every now and then, maybe allowing some of your emotions to come out in front of her, but just explaining to her what's happening, you know, and telling her like, it's not up to her to make you feel better. You're just showing her it's safe sometimes to feel emotions and that's totally natural. And then once it's kind of just like with us, once we fully feel our emotions to completion and we feel more grounded, we can think more openly about the situation. Versus like if she's for some reason feeling triggered and or a big emotion responding out of that, if you come in with an immediate reprimand, then she doesn't know how to, it's almost like if we're triggered and someone tells us not to do something, that doesn't make us feel better, right? Like we immediately feel like, well, fuck off or whatever, because we're in our trigger, we're in our emotion. So if you can get her to the place of like fully expressing her emotions, and then once she's more grounded and regulated, maybe even not in that setting, but maybe later or something, having another conversation about like, how do you think we could respond next time if that happens, you know, where we're not creating bad feelings in the other person, but, you know, how could you maybe go somewhere else? Or how could you call me? Or how could you like, and just having a conversation about like what she can do next time could be an alternative.
Okay. Those are some things that I've read in books that I try to employ. So yeah, I think that's right. It's just the knee-jerk reaction to correct her when she's rude to people is something that I need to work on.
Right, because that's, yeah, I would say if there's a knee-jerk, there's something in you.
Right.
Right, that's a you issue.
Right.
So yeah, like working through that and recognizing, I mean, it's really interesting to me, like how I see parents parenting their kids so different from how I was parented. Like I was in a coffee shop the other day and this kid was like, screaming and going around and showing people things like his toys and stuff. And dude, if I ever did that, my parents would be like, stop screaming. We need to go outside. Don't go up to those people. You don't even know them. What are you doing? And they were just like laughing and everyone was like enjoying the child, you know, for the most part, like interacting with the child. And I was like, this is so different. Like, this is so different from what I grew up with. I can't even imagine. So we often will step into the frameworks we were taught. And so it's like evaluating those frameworks and being like, you know, if there's an impulse, if there's an urgency to correct, just taking that through some reprogramming first to feel into what's authentic for me in this moment. You know, like me as an authentic parent, what feels right for me? And that will be revealed to you in your reprogramming. And it may not be the same as those parents in the coffee shop. Like maybe, you know, you end up just walking your kid out, but without the reprimand, you know, or maybe it is letting your kid go talk to every single person in the coffee shop. Who knows, right? Like whatever feels right to you. But yeah, I think it's just like, I mean, kids, holy shit, biggest mirror, like the biggest mirror you're going to have for your own shit.
I don't know why I felt the need to share this earlier, so I'm going to say it. But yesterday, my daughter lost her little lovey for a little while, and she couldn't find it. And she looked at me and she said, "Mama, who will I be if I can't find it?" And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, "Who will I be if I don't have this thing I love so much?" And it's just like, as you were talking today, it reminded me of her saying that yesterday, because it's kind of what we're talking about now.
100%.
Yeah.
We learn from a young age to define ourselves with the things that we have and with the people around us. Right. Like, I love that. Like, that's such an existential question. Oh my God.
Yeah. She's six. It was crazy.
Such a high level question from a 6-year-old, but also like, kids say smart, amazing things like that all the time, you know, where you're just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Anything else from anybody?
Just that was so good. It was so good.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. Does everyone feel like they kind of can take away something from that?
Yeah, I definitely have codependent behaviors. I'm like, okay. Yep. Yep. One. Yep.
Don't worry, we all do.
Yeah, I mean, it's so common, you guys. I've never coached anyone that didn't have some codependent behaviors. I mean, it's like, yeah, again, I think it's changing a little bit with conscious parenting, and people are forming like really secure attachments to their parents, and they're learning who they are. And I think it's going to change, but a bit much to expect that from our caretakers. Thank you for tuning in to this behind the scenes group coaching call episode. This group coaching call is from my program, Your Life's Work, which is a 10-month program to help you cultivate a really juicy, joyful, purpose-driven career. If you want to find more sustainable joy in your career without having to chase one success or achievement after another, you can find this course, Your Life's Work, at thetransformationschool.com. In this course, we also cover all sorts of things, including the art and science of manifestation, which is the reason why people manifest so many things both in and out of their career when they take Your Life's Work. If you want to learn more, head over to thetransformationschool.com, or you can also look in the show notes to watch a free training on how to finally have a joyful career. If you like this episode, be sure to pass it along to someone else that would benefit from it too. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.